This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, I'm Sumitra Selvaraj. Welcome to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, where we're going to be discussing multiple sclerosis, or MS for short. Now, the early signs are not always obvious. The cause is unknown and it can be difficult to confirm. Yet, MS is the most common autoimmune disorder of the central nervous system. Now, if you have any questions about MS, please do feel free to tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or call in at 03-7733-2900. In the studio with us today is consultant neurologist Dr. Shanthi Viswanathan from HKL, who will share her knowledge about the importance of early diagnosis, the risks and prevalence of MS, as well as treatments available. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Shanthi.
Thank you for having me over here. I'm very excited to be here.
Absolutely our pleasure. Now, I'm going to start by getting you to explain to us what exactly is MS. We know it's an autoimmune condition, but what exactly is it?
Thanks for that question. Well, multiple sclerosis is a chronic autoimmune inflammatory demyelinating disorder. That's a mouthful.
It is.
Yes. So basically what happens here is the body's immune system, made up of white cells, the T cells, the B cells, these T cells and B cells, they're supposed to protect us from infection and do immune surveillance. But what happens here is that instead of protecting, it attacks the nerves in the body, affecting the lining of the nerves that we call the myelin. Now, this myelin over the nerves is important for proper functioning of these nerves. And these attacks can happen in the brain, the spinal cord, and the nerves going to the eyes. Mm-hmm. Now, what happens in this particular disorder is that these attacks will go and come. And when these attacks happen, there's loss of function of the nerves. Now, in the beginning of this disease, patients who have these kind of attacks on the nerves, they can recover and they repair themselves. Mm-hmm. But as time goes by, that repair is not complete. Mm. And patients are left with permanent signs and symptoms. So in this particular disorder, it's a disorder that affects young people mainly. Females seem to be more affected than males, and it affects people in the age range of 20s to 40s. So when these attacks come and go, if you have a problem in the eye, for example, if the attack happens in the eye, what happens is they have this temporary blurring of vision that can last for a few days, mm-hmm. and then it recovers by itself and goes away. Or if the attack happens in the brain, so what happens is they may have numbness or weakness of one side of the body, or they may have a problem with double vision, unsteadiness of gait, mm-hmm. or it can happen even affecting their problems. They may have problems with passing urine and going to the toilet. So these attacks, they come and go, and in the beginning, the body is able to repair itself. But as time goes by, they are left with permanent disabilities. So if we look at the evidence in terms of the prevalence in the country, MS is a condition that's usually seen in Western countries where the temperature or the climate is a little bit more temperate, mm-hmm. usually seen more in the US, Europe, Australia, New Zealand. And in Asia, it's not that common. So in Malaysia, the prevalence is somewhere between 3 to 4 per 100,000. But I'm sure that there are many patients out there that we have not diagnosed.
Especially since, you know, the symptoms that you've managed, they're quite diverse symptoms, but they're not the only symptoms of MS. MS has quite a wide range of symptoms. Could you perhaps go through some of them with us?
Yes, sure. So, I mean, if it affects the eyes, patients may come complaining of painful blurring of vision mm-hmm. that lasts for a couple of days. Then after a while, it kind of gets better by itself within a few days, 2 weeks. If it affects the brainstem, then what happens is they may have problems in the eyes where they complain of double vision or shaky eyes. Sometimes they may have problems where they have numbness in the face, or they may have weakness in their hands or in their legs, or they may have some numbness on one side of the body. It comes, it goes. So aside from that, they may have problems with their bowel, their bladder. If it affects the cerebellum or the brainstem, what they may complain of is they have incoordination in mm-hmm. walking, unsteadiness walking. So there are several types of MS. Now, there's one type called clinically isolated syndrome, and this is the earliest attack of MS. So Patients like this may come with the typical signs and symptoms of the eye involvement or the cord involvement or the brain involvement.
Sorry, typically is the eye symptom one of the first that you see?
Actually, there are many symptoms that can come and go, come and go.
Right.
One of the commonest symptoms that come in patients with MS is the sensory symptoms. Mm. So that's one of the commonest, the numbness, the tingling, it comes and goes. Or motor symptoms such as weakness. Then, aside from that, they can have this kind of involvement of the eye where they have this blurring of vision.
Mm.
So these symptoms are what we call the typical signs and symptoms of clinically isolated syndrome. Some other patients may have these kind of attacks. We call it attacks or relapses that come and go in the beginning. And as time goes by, they're able to recover well. We call that relapsing remitting.
Okay.
There's another type of MS where from the very beginning, patients may have signs and symptoms that slowly get worse, usually affecting their ability to walk or progressive worsening in their coordination or even problems with cognition. So MS symptoms are quite varied. But if you have these kind of symptoms, it's best to go and see a physician or a neurologist and get it investigated. And along the line, a lot of investigations that can help in terms of confirming the diagnosis of MS. One of the gold standards is actually doing a brain MRI.
Okay. Let me just go back to the symptoms. And I want to know whether, in your experience, how late or how early do patients tend to present themselves in hospitals with symptoms?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I mean, they've done studies and they've found that patients tend to initially not pay too much attention to the symptoms and they neglect it. And what happens is they may present quite late. But now with the advent of better awareness, we find that patients are, a certain percentage of them are seeking treatment earlier when they have these kind of typical troubling symptoms that don't get better. So I think a high index of suspicion and awareness is very important in getting them to get investigated.
So all this while we've talked about physical symptoms, are there any associated symptoms that are perhaps psychological or mental health in nature?
Yeah, that's a very good question too. Patients with MS also complain of problems with their attention. They may have anxiety and depression as a result of the disease, as well as part of the disease. They also have problems where they have problems with doing a lot of things at the same time, concentration, executive functioning. So this is some of the cognitive symptoms that patients with MS may have. Aside from that, patients with MS also complain of problems with fatigue. And that can be seen in nearly 80 to 90% of patients with MS. So that makes it very difficult for them to get to work, focus on activities of daily living, etc.
Okay. So earlier on, you had mentioned that there was a couple of types of MS. You talked about relapsing remitting as well. Besides relapsing remitting, are there other types of MS that we should know about that are commonly seen?
Yeah. So like I mentioned, the first attack of MS, we call it clinically isolated syndrome. Then that's the second type, the most common type. 85% of patients may have this relapsing, remitting type of disease. But there are other types of MS called progressive MS. So these are patients that form about 10% to 15% of patients with MS. And as I mentioned before, these are patients who come complaining that they notice that their symptoms are slowly getting worse over months to years. They may have problems where they have progressive worsening in their gait, ability to walk, progressive worsening in their cognition, progressive worsening in their ability to have coordination. And they also may present with progressive symptoms in their sphincters, for example, their bowel and bladder works. So these are some of the symptoms of progressive MS. And even in progressive MS, there are patients who have relapses. So it's very important to distinguish between the different types of MS because identifying patients with MS early during the inflammatory relapsing remitting phase is important as we have more treatments that produce a better impact in this particular phase of the disease. When patients are in the progressive phase, as compared to many years ago, we do have newer treatments now, but it's a little bit more challenging in terms of managing this group of patients.
So all this while we've talked about slowly progressing symptoms, is it at all possible for MS to rapidly progress?
Yes, there's a subgroup of patients that have a type of MS called acute, fulminant, aggressive type of MS. Mm-hmm. So in this group of patients, as compared to the conventional relapsing remitting group, they may present with very devastating symptoms mm-hmm. that very quickly, within a short period of time, leave them with a lot of devastating disability.
Okay, so I've been speaking to consultant neurologist Dr. Shanthi Viswanathan about the autoimmune condition multiple sclerosis. We've gone through so far exactly what is MS and gone through some of the symptoms. When we come back later on after a short break, we're going to get into the specifics of the disease itself. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can call in at 03-7733-2900. You're listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Sumitra Selvaraj. Now, I'm speaking to Dr. Shanthi Viswanathan about MS. Dr. Shanthi earlier mentioned that in MS, the immune system attacks the myelin sheath that encases nerves. So what exactly is the role of the myelin sheath when it comes to the brain and spinal cord?
Right. So the nerves are surrounded by a layer called the myelin, and the nerves are like electrical wires. And basically, the myelin is important for conduction of electrical impulses. Mm. So what happens is that in MS, you have this autoimmune attack, and the white cells, made up of the T lymphocytes and the B lymphocytes, they are triggered by certain triggers. We're not very sure what these triggers are. Mm-hmm. And they become autoreactive. That means that they attack the body's own cells, which are the body's own nerves. So when they breach what we call the blood-brain barrier, mm-hmm. they enter the central nervous system, which is the brain and the spinal cord, and they attack the lining of these nerves, which is the myelin. So depending where within the central nervous system they attack, they'll produce a very varied type of signs and symptoms that the patient experiences. So in the beginning of this attack, that myelin can be repaired by the body's own repair mechanisms. Mm. But as time goes by, the reserve reduces. And what happens is that repair mechanism becomes faulty. So then patients develop permanent loss of nerves or neurons. And this leads to permanent symptoms that don't go away and disability in the long run.
Okay, you mentioned the blood-brain barrier. Now, as far as I know, this is what's considered the policeman.
Absolutely correct.
Yes. But how is it? What is it that actually triggers the crossover?
Right. So as I mentioned, there are many triggers that are postulated out there. Mm-hmm. So it may be a genetic susceptibility or a viral infection mm-hmm. or some unknown toxin, diet, etc., that causes these white cells to become autoreactive. And once they become autoreactive, what happens is they attack the blood-brain barrier and it becomes leaky, and these cells, together with the mediators of inflammation mm-hmm. that make the blood-brain barrier leaky, they attack and enter within the central nervous system.
So that's what happens within the body. But what about outside the surface? What does an MS attack look like?
Yes. So once the dysfunction occurs within the central nervous system, be it the nerves going to the eyes or to the brain or the spinal cord, mm-hmm. patients will have the symptoms. So those symptoms are what we mentioned earlier, the blurring of vision, where they suddenly develop a little bit of pain when they move the eyes, some flashes of light, and then the vision slowly dims. It's as though they are looking through a glass, but it's not very clear and it's hazy. Mm. And sometimes the vision can completely go off and they only see black spots or completely blackness. So if the attack happens in the side of the brain, the right or the left, then they may have affecting the motor area. So patients may develop some weakness or numbness of one side of the body. And that takes a few days or a few weeks to get better. So if it affects the tracts that control you to feel, mm-hmm. then you may have numbness on one side of the body or several sides of the either in the hands or in the legs. And that lasts for a few days and it goes off. Sometimes these symptoms may be just one area. Sometimes it may be two areas simultaneously getting attacked. If it affects the brainstem and the cerebellum, then patients may complain about this double vision and incoordination walking. So those are some of the symptoms that produced by this autoimmune, autoreactive T-cell attack and B-cell attack.
And you're saying that these symptoms can last a few days?
Absolutely correct. So that's one of the things that may that's interesting about MS is that in the relapsing, remitting phase of the disease, the symptoms, they come and then they go, and some patients in the beginning completely recover. Mm. In comparison to other mimickers of MS, such as stroke, where the symptoms come and the patient is left with permanent weakness and numbness that takes months or even years to get a little bit better or not at all.
So when you say that the patients completely recover, does that mean that there is no or very little chance of them getting symptoms again in the future?
Well, it depends on the type of MS that they have.
Right.
If they have a very aggressive type, the relapsing remitting type, mm-hmm. that is active, then they will definitely have further attacks. But MS is such a heterogeneous disorder. So we have certain factors that determine or which patient will be very active and which patient may be very aggressive and fulminant. We can kind of, from studies, gauge that this particular patient with MS, because they're having a lot of attacks in the beginning, the MRI shows a lot of white spots, that this patient may probably in the future have more attacks as compared to another patient mm-hmm. who's having one attack and then the next attack comes maybe 2, 3, 4 years down the line, and then the MRI only shows a few white spots. So mm-hmm. these are some of the factors that help us to gauge and determine which patient may be a little bit just active or some patients that may be a little bit more aggressive, fulminant. And how the attack recovers. Like in the beginning of the disease, a lot of them, they have active disease, but mm-hmm. the relapses go and come and they recover very well. But there are some patients who've got aggressive fulminant disease. After one or two attacks, they're left with a lot of disability. So that's what helps us to determine which MS patient may be a little bit more active or more aggressive as compared to another patient.
Okay. So while it sounds like, you know, you've got all the symptoms down, you've got the ability to be able to diagnose this down, and yet it's still such a difficult disease to diagnose. Why is that?
Well, I think there are multiple factors for this. First of all, the lack of awareness amongst the public, the mm-hmm. community, about this particular disease. As I mentioned to you, it's still rather rare mm-hmm. in this region. But the number of cases now are definitely increasing. The other factor is the fact that the symptoms come and go and they recover. So patients may not find the need in the beginning
right.
of the disease to come and see a physician or a neurologist and get investigated. Of course, another factor may be the fact that to do the investigations, some of it may be economically difficult for a certain group of patients mm. to access. So that may be one of the other reasons.
Do some other diseases perhaps mimic the symptoms of MS?
Absolutely correct. There are a number of other demyelinating disorders
okay.
or other autoimmune disorders that mimic MS. Just to name a few would mm. be one like neuromyelitis optica spectrum disorder, mm. which is commoner in this particular region, that seems to mimic in terms of how the symptoms and signs affect certain patients. Other mimickers would include, especially if the older age group gets some of these kind of symptoms and signs, would be strokes,
mm-hmm.
then vasculitis, such as systemic lupus erythematosus, just to name a few that can sometimes mimic and make the diagnosis a little bit difficult. So this is where it's very important to get in touch with the healthcare service, mm-hmm. where you have physicians and neurologists who are aware about the disease, how to investigate it, and how to come up with a proper, correct diagnosis.
You mentioned earlier on that MRIs are used in diagnosing MS. Is that the only imaging procedure that's used to confirm and monitor MS?
Yes, well, when a patient comes with some signs and symptoms which are suggestive mm. of multiple sclerosis. So what we would do is take a complete history, examine them and see whether they fall into that category of relapsing, remitting, or they're the first event that's highly suggestive of MS mm. or progressive disease. Secondly, we do blood tests to rule out other potential diseases that can mimic the condition.
Mm.
Then we would go on to do neuroimaging, which involves an MRI of the brain and the spinal cord mm. and even looking at the optic nerve. In this imaging, there are certain criteria that are available that help us to diagnose that from that particular brain scan or spinal cord scan, that it is more likely to resemble MS rather than one of the other mimickers. Now, in some cases, it may be a bit difficult, and we may even want to do certain other tests to support, for example, doing a spinal tap, taking a bit of fluid and looking for what we call the oligoclonal band, a particular protein that can be seen in 80 to 90% of MS when it's in the Caucasian group, whereas in Asia, we see it in about 50 to 70% of patients. Mm. And of course, sometimes we even look at certain other ancillary tests, like, for example, we look at evoked potentials, looking at the speed of conduction through the eye nerve, there's nerves that go to the spinal cord. This also helps us to support this particular diagnosis.
When you're looking at MRI imaging to diagnose MS, does the actual position of the lesions matter? Does that in any way change how the disease manifests?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, nowadays, when you do MRIs, especially in the older age group, you may find that a lot of them, some of them have diabetes and hypertension. They have some white spots that are actually small vessel disease. Mm. So it's very important. We have a criteria that helps us to diagnose patients with MS. It's called the McDonald's criteria, and we have certain neuroimaging criteria which are incorporated into that criteria. So by using that criteria, white spots in the brain, which are in typical areas and are not in the typical areas for what we call small vessel disease, helps us in distinguishing between the two. But I must say, sometimes it is difficult and there can be some overlaps. And this is where going to a center that is experienced, where you have people who have dealt with this kind of disease, neuroradiologists or radiologists who have experience in diagnosing this disease, is quite important.
Mm. So we've looked at the diagnosis in quite an in-depth manner. I'd like to move on to the treatment of MS. What are the some main aspects of treatment?
I think nowadays we are looking more and more about managing MS as a in a holistic kind of manner, using a multidisciplinary kind of approach.
Okay.
So when patients come in initially with the first few signs and symptoms suggestive of MS, you've confirmed the diagnosis that this is MS, then we would treat the acute attack or the acute relapse, first of all, with steroids. Yes. And then once they have been treated with the steroids, they are starting to recover, we would then discuss with them and sit down with them and tell them, look, you've got this disease, it's MS. And there's enough evidence to suggest that early treatment may definitely make a difference to you in the long run. And it's easier to treat in the early inflammatory phase. Mm-hmm. So getting onto treatment would be rather important. And now compared to before, we are more fortunate that there are more number of drugs available. We have a number of oral drugs. We have a number of injectable drugs. We have also a number of infusion drugs. So depending on what disease type or type of MS that they have, we would suggest a particular type of drug for them. Now, it's also important to get these kind of patients onto rehabilitation. Mm. And this is where exercise, physiotherapy, treating their symptoms of MS, like, for example, the sensory symptoms, the coordination, their bowel, bladder issues, and not to forget the other things like treating fatigue and the cognitive issues, the psychiatric issues that can sometimes crop up, for example, the anxiety, the depression. So all this is very important. So what we are basically saying is that during the acute attack, you treat the acute attack, then you decide on whether they fulfill the criteria for maintenance treatment, and not to forget the importance of treating the symptoms of MS. Now, it's important to have a team. So I'm fortunate that I work in Kuala Lumpur Hospital, and we have a good team out there, and we have neurologists, we have a neuropsychiatrist, we have a neuroradiologist, we've got physiotherapy, occupational therapy, and we've got a number of sister hospitals that we can refer these kind of patients to for them to get rehab.
I would also assume that it would be important to have a psychologist or some sort of counselling on hand as well, not just for the patient themselves, but for the family of the patient or the caregivers of the patient, because when it comes to dealing with such a debilitating disease, it is life-changing.
Yes, I think that too has is slowly improving over the years. We're fortunate here in Malaysia, we have the Multiple Sclerosis Society. And usually what I do during my counselling is that definitely tell my MS patients that if you need to reach out to someone, here's the society, the Multiple Sclerosis Society. And if you need some questions to be answered, we would plan another appointment where we would discuss some of the issues that sometimes crop up, especially amongst the young women with MS.
So when we talked about treatment options, actually, that I had just one burning question. Is it possible to repair the myelin sheath?
Well, I think that's a great question. And there's a lot of ongoing research where they're looking at certain chemical components that may be helpful in terms of stimulating the regrowth of the myelin through stimulating the oligodendrocytes and oligodendrocyte precursor cells. It's still very much research-based. There's no current new evidence that says there's any remyelinating therapy, but I think this is something for the future. But it's very important that patients who have signs and symptoms suggestive of MS get in touch with their healthcare facility, get diagnosed early, because when we're in the early inflammatory phase, that's where a lot of the treatments can make a lot of difference.
Okay. I'm glad you mentioned the future, because I want to take a quick break now, but when we come back, I want to talk about a little bit about the prognosis and really what the future holds for patients of MS. I'm speaking to consultant neurologist Dr. Shanthi Viswanathan about the treatment options for MS. You can still send us your questions by tweeting us at BFM Radio, sending us a WhatsApp at 018-789-8899, or you can call us at 0377-33-2900. You're listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Sumitra Selvaraj. I'm speaking to Dr. Shanthi Viswanathan about MS, or multiple sclerosis. Now, we've been through diagnosis, treatment options. We're coming up towards the end of the interview, but I really wanted to find out from you, because this is a debilitating, progressive illness, how does MS affect the quality of life when it comes to a patient?
That's a great question. There have been a lot of studies that have looked at this, especially in this group of patients. And a lot of them have shown that patients with MS, about 50% of them or more, will have problems with anxiety, depression. They have problems with cognitive abilities. So they have problems at work, coping with the work, dealing with the work. Mm. They have problems with dealing with the activities of daily living. Mm. In their thinking processes, concentration. And some studies have even shown that the unemployment rates are higher in patients with MS, as well as in terms of interpersonal relationships. They have some issues there, as well as keeping the family unit together. So, I mean, these are studies that have shown that definitely MS does affect patients' quality of life to a certain extent. And this is where I think it's very important for us to identify this group of patients early and get them onto treatment so that they are out there, they have hope, and they're able to continue to work, have a family, and function as normally as they can, even though they have this particular disease.
Would you classify MS as a degenerative brain disease?
Well, I think there are two phases to this particular disease. Mm. The first phase is that early inflammatory phase. And then as time goes by, they go into that later phase where there's a little bit more neurodegeneration rather than inflammation. So if you look at it, it's basically, it looks like it's a continuum, but there are two phases to it.
Okay. So what then is the prognosis or outlook for MS?
I think compared to what it was about 30, 40 years ago, the overall prognosis for patients with the advent of better treatment, increased awareness, earlier identification, the prognosis is now is much better than what it was before. Mm. So in terms of mortality rates for patients with MS, it has actually dropped over the years as compared to what it was before. Mm. So you don't die of MS.
Okay.
Right? So that's one thing that we need to be very clear about. But of course, when MS goes into that progressive phase and they have disabilities, this is where then there's a little bit of shortening of the lifespan as compared to the lifespan of a patient that doesn't have MS. But what I want to get across is that treatment and identification of MS is much better now as compared to what it was many, many years ago. And I think that patients with MS should have understand that there's a lot of hope for them. Lead an active, healthy lifestyle. Make sure that they are taking good food, healthy, nutritious food, exercise, and be regular with your health checkups with your neurologists or your physicians.
So in your experience and in HKL, what are some of the barriers to diagnosis and treatment that you've seen?
There are patient-related factors, and of course, there are other factors with regard to access to treatment and investigations. So let's look at some of the patient-related factors. When you first initially meet a patient and you give them the diagnosis of MS, one of the things is there can be a little bit of denial of the disease, failure to be able to accept that they have that particular disease.
Is that also because the symptoms come and go?
Yes. So that's a very good point. Because the symptoms come and go at the beginning, they may fail to realize the need to get diagnosed and get onto treatment.
It'll be fine in a week's time.
Absolutely. But what we need to highlight is that when those symptoms are at that particular phase, that's when we can make the most difference by identifying them earlier.
Okay. What are some of the other patient-related barriers?
So another patient-related barrier would be that in terms of gaining access to treatment. Now, compared to what it was many years ago, this has tremendously improved. There's been better support in terms of getting patients onto treatment. However, still a lot of challenges exist and a lot of work needs to be done. So this is where we need the public-private partnerships in getting patients onto treatment early and making sure that that treatment that they get is sustainable.
What does the support landscape look like here in Malaysia? You mentioned the society. What about, is there any other things? Are there any other sort of avenues for patients?
Yeah, so now with the advent of, you know, the multimedia as well as internet connections, MS patients are more fortunate in the sense that they can reach out to other MS societies in neighbouring countries, whether within Asia or even in Europe or Australia or the States. And this is where it's important because with that comes awareness, knowledge, and they have this kind of support that helps them to cope with their particular disease, understand the particular disease, as well as to cope with getting onto treatment and what the monitoring and side effects may be there with these particular treatments.
Okay. Which leads to the million-dollar question. Do you think that there will be a cure?
Well, I think we are very, very hopeful about this. There's a lot of active research going on in globally with regard to this particular disease, especially in the West and even here in Asia. So I think that though we don't have a cure for the particular disease at the moment, but there's a lot of hope. And I think with this, this is where we need to encourage our patients to continue to come back to the healthcare system, go for your follow-ups, lead a healthy lifestyle, continue if you're on treatment to make sure that you're on that treatment so that you prevent yourself from having a lot of disability and problems in the future.
Would you be able to share with us some of the most perhaps significant advancements that have occurred in the fight against MS over the last perhaps decade?
I think some of the advancements are the improvements in terms of our ability to diagnose the particular disease and differentiate it from mimickers such as neuromyelitis optica spectrum disorder. The fact the advent and improvements in technology in terms of the MRI, neuroimaging, that has really tremendously improved and allowed us to diagnose patients with MS earlier. And of course, not forgetting the improvements in terms of treatments. Access to treatment is improving, but a lot of challenges. We really need to improve access to treatments. And in terms of investigations, these investigations also have evolved and helped us to diagnose patients with MS and differentiate them from other potential mimickers.
So, Dr. Shanti, your final message for patients out there who are living with MS and for those who are perhaps on the brink of being diagnosed with MS, what are your final thoughts for them?
I think I'd like to encourage them and tell them that there's a lot of hope. Remember, you're not alone. Engage your healthcare providers. Get your investigations or treatments. Continue to live a healthy lifestyle. And remember that exercise and nutritious food all are very important in preventing yourself from developing any other comorbidities that can also impact on your life.
Okay, thank you for that. Dr. Shanti, I wish you all the very best in getting the word out there for early diagnosis. I know how important this is to you and to HKL as well. So I want to thank you for coming in here with us today. I've been speaking to Dr. Shanti Viswanathan, consultant neurologist at HKL, about the diagnosis and treatment of multiple sclerosis. If you missed any part of this interview, you can download the podcast from our BFM app or on Spotify. You've been listening to Health and Living on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.